Thomas Booker for Bondi Tunes Radio. Circa 1974, at corner of Broadway and East Houston Street in San Antonio de Bejar. I was working my way through junior college and had a stint as the occasional night clerk in a bookstore nestled inside an old office building right on the corner of the downtown street intersection. I was a clueless kid, had my own opinions, point of view, none of which were justifiable or validated. The real world had yet to wreak havoc on my perceptions. The job was a job. I learned the essential tasks in order to do it, such as take orders for book requests, remove out-of-date newspapers and magazines for return, and bundling the previous week's copy of the Daily Racing Form, a newsletter for those who studied the horse racing industry. I had issues with the racing form. Sometimes a big car, not quite a limo, would pull up to the curb outside the store, violating traffic ordinances, and the driver would hop out and pop into the store to grab a copy of the racing form for his passenger, apparently who was his boss, sitting in the back seat, sunglasses, and concealed. It all looked shady, and in fact the ambient of the store, its location, and the store owner's predilections made me suspect the place was run by a mafiosi. I was simply clueless then. I did not understand how the world worked. Adding to my naive suspicions, the bookstore was not the kind of place I felt any prestige working in. Some nice folks would walk in, a really nice couple would come in on a regular basis looking for copies by such authors as Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, others looking for books on spirituality, it was the new age back then, and a gay guy who regularly came to find the latest edition of Dance Magazine. Another fellow, a World War II buff, regularly came in looking for photo history books on war and weapons. Other browsers off the street were inclined not necessarily to buy books, but they would scope the place out. It tended to get more intense at night. Some postal employees took their break time at around 8, came into the store perhaps to escape the drudgery of their jobs. The Central Post Office was in the Federal Building just a block or so away, and get into all sorts of conversations as they clumped in the middle of the store, causing distractions. One evening, they had an extensive discussion on the true meaning of Stanley Kubrick's movie 2001: Space Odyssey. Other evenings, it was politics or sports or war stories. I was supposed to be watching for shoplifters or possible troublemakers, with plenty of shady characters wandering the streets outside, some potentially causing concerns. I was alone with the cash register full of money, in a shop open to all of downtown San Antonio, after dark, and with chaos happening right in front of me. In daytime, the stretch of East Houston sort of belonged to this really big, really tall Polish guy, Officer Kalinowski. He was a San Antonio Police Department officer. Officer Kalinowski made sure nothing was going to happen on the street, and if it did, it would not last long. One day, at the Florsheim shoe store across the street, a shoplifter was fleeing the scene of his crime, and a clerk called out to Officer Kalinowski, who intercepted and took hold of the guy, in so doing, executing a perfect pirouette, at the end of which the suspect was cuffed and subdued. During the day, in the mid-afternoon, Officer Kalinowski came up to our office loft, where I sorted all the arrivals and returns of magazines and newspapers. A desk abutted the forward sill of a window you used to keep an eye on the store while doing routine chores. Officer K would settle into the seat of the sorting desk, open the bottom right drawer where he kept a bottle of Jack Daniels, from which he would pour a jigger or so to sip on while he took his moment to relax. It was a little secret we all shared, and Officer K was welcome to take his little breaks. He was a likable guy, and he kept us safe. At night, there was no Officer K. On occasion, another police officer on night shift would pass by, sometimes walking in to let everyone at the store know he was there. He wore his police officer hat kinked at an angle to his face, and his service revolver was hung low in his hip, symmetrically matching his cap, and giving him the aura of a small-town sheriff in an earlier era seeking to keep the peace in the town. But that officer did not linger long because he had a larger beat. An attraction to the people roaming the street was our magazine rack. The racks were on the wall of the store to my left, and there were four of them, starting with the slots containing the mainstream publications, Life, Look, Time, U.S. News and World Report, and on down the line. The next rack had specialty periodicals, including Field and Stream magazine, Outdoor Life, and essentially sports and outdoors. Then came the gossip magazines, Hollywood Gossip, Fan Faves, Stars Profiles, Teen Magazines, Fan Magazines, and so on down the line. The last rack was a source of special concern, immediately to my left for ready surveillance. It started at the top with Playboy, then Penthouse, got lower and ranker with magazines such as, say, Hustler, and on down the line of soft porn magazines, with the exception of magazines tastefully or grossly featuring full gynecological aspects of the beautiful dolls. The pornography rack was also the most constantly stocked because the owner of the store swept far and wide to ensure the racks were brimming with any or all kinds of porno. It progressively got raunchier with vintage editions going back to the early 60s, when the models were considerably more buxom, full-figured, and all photos covered the model's eyes with a classic black rectangle, so they would retain a faux anonymity not easily recognized outside the magazine. I do believe some of the oldie magazines were vintage copies going all the way back to the 50s. The porno rack, as we called it, tended to be very problematic, and after a few instances of some patrons becoming overcome while browsing, one of the sources of potential trouble I dreaded next to someone wanting to rob the cash register. Evenings at the store, which closed at 11 p.m., were somewhat anxiety-inducing, and the later the hour, the greater concern of something icky happening there. There was a certain poignancy to the magazine rack. The racks that carried Teen Vogue and Star magazines, well, some of them were in Spanish, featuring celebrities and stars of Mexico and other Latin American countries, TV and moviedom. Spanish, Mexican, and Latin American television was available on TV channels in the San Antonio market. There was all Spanish radio and the AM bands as well. The teen and gossip magazines were the attraction to adolescent Mexican-American girls, who usually came in pairs or threes to browse and pick up the latest copies, and would ooh and ah at the articles and the photos of handsome leading males and photos of leading ladies from various shows or movies. The poignancy of it all was that the young girls were seriously overweight. They tended to dress nicely and they were overly made up, but because of their being fat, they were seen to be as unattractive in certain cultures. And the sad part of it all was they're coming into the store to buy some fan magazines, then go a few doors down to sit in the front tables of Uncle Charlie's Hamburgers. The buildings along downtown San Antonio were old, modest, multi-story, except for the hotels. 5 or 6 or 10 floors with gaps in between the individual buildings. The gaps were just wide enough to accommodate a walled-off storefront space that was essentially a wide hallway, usually ending in an alley. Uncle Charlie's Hamburgers was just such a place, and it had a grill, a soda fountain, and a few tables up front. In the rear of Uncle Charlie's was a game room with pool table and pinball machine, perhaps other distractions. In the back room of Uncle Charlie's was where some serious San Antonio chicos or tough guys hung out. They were people one pale-faced Anglo guy, like me, did not want to mess with. They may have been part of a gang, may have been on the razor-thin edge of the law, but they were a tight group with territory, and that back room was no place for a guy like me to go try to crash. The chicos had their babes, really hot-looking Mexican-American ladies who stuck to their guys. The back room was filled with smoke and Mexicano pop music with its samba beat and shrieking lyrics from a jukebox a la Mexicano, and their ladies moved the tunes while watching their men admiringly. In the front of Uncle Charlie's sat the poor, plump, over-made-up Mexican girls, sitting together sipping soft drinks, eating French fries or candy, and poring over the fan magazines. they would never be the property of a sinuous Mexicano gaucho, and all they had to share with each other were the dreams the fan magazines gave them. Through most of its modern history, San Antonio hosted a few military bases in the area. Randolph Air Force Base in the northeast reaches of Bexar County, Camp Bullis to the far northwest, Fort Sam Houston, nearest to the center of the San Antonio downtown, a venerable army post existing since the end of the American Civil War. Then there was Kelly Air Force Base, a sprawling facility for the maintenance of some of the bomber fleet, and an advanced training field for fully commissioned officer pilots. Adjacent to Kelly was, and still is, Lackland Air Force Base. Lots of off-duty soldiers could be seen in the downtown streets in the evenings. They would play tourist or hit the restaurants, or if they were old enough, bar hop around. I once overheard a discussion between a soldier and a street preacher who was trying to bring the soldier to Jesus. The soldier was just asking for advice on where to go pick up girls or just get laid. It was a very strange struggle between the sacred and the profane on a street corner of San Antonio, and my sympathies were with the soldier. Some of the aimless soldiers also liked to browse through books and magazines, never seeming to bother with the soft porn rack, perhaps out of a desire not to aggravate their homesickness. Lackland is a school, a basic training facility, and a training facility for Allied military personnel to undergo basic and extended training. There was also a language school where they could learn operational English and be introduced to the society and the culture of the USA. One of the clients for that school back then was Iran. The Iranians were rank-and-file soldiers sent to the USA so they could better be able to operate in concert with the United States and NATO forces. They were thus attendees for a year-long stretch at Lackland Air Force Base. When the Iranian military personnel had time off from school, they were free to make themselves at home in San Antonio, and all the better to be allies. Needless to say, this was before the Ayatollah and the hostage crisis. The Shah was still in power. At the time, Iranian soldiers off-duty started showing up downtown. They would wander into the bookstore, ask me questions like, where is the River Walk and what is Mexican food? At the time, I did not know enough about Islam to warn that Mexican cuisine was definitely not halal. Over time, a group of two or three wandered into the store. I did not know whether I should be expecting a culture clash, but they would look over the books, become disinterested, and wander out into the night of downtown San Antonio. The one night, it was always a night, the worst happened. The porno racks were already a concern of mine, as mentioned, but the dreaded night revealed itself when a group of Iranians discovered the porno racks. Two or three clustered at the fourth rack and began a conversation sort of like this.
Abdul, Abdul, come look.
Abdul arrived to look.
Hey, hey!
The group gathered at the porno rack. They grabbed Playboy, quickly leafed through it, and threw it back while they hissed. They grabbed Penthouse, flipped through it, and put it back. They worked their way down the porno rack until they got to the old early 60s and late 50s magazines with the dark rectangles of the eyes of the models. The plump, abundant models.
Hey, look, look, hey!
They were riven with astonishment and passion, and for the first time in my recollection, a couple of the old porno magazines actually sold. They threw their money on the counter and asked me to make change from it. I thought I could have taken them for all they were worth, but I just charged them prices and gave them the honest change. Every few days, new groups of Iranians stopped by in the evenings and went directly to the lower shelves of the porno rack to see for themselves the selections of naked beauties such as they had never beheld. The fervor died down with each group visiting, but the interest remained, as did the occasional feverish browsing. But then another event of great astonishment occurred, not just affecting me and my co-workers, but the other store tenders on East Houston Street. Something had happened to Uncle Charlie's hamburgers. It was very sudden. The Mexican brass and rhythm music had disappeared, and at this place was blaring raucous Middle Eastern music. Somehow, without any violence any of us were aware, the Iranians had taken over Uncle Charlie's. The Mexicano chicos and their shapely girlfriends were gone. Iranian soldiers on leave had taken over the game room. It had all just happened and none of us knew how. Then occurred another momentous development. The sad, fat Mexican maidens who bought the fan magazines and sat in groups indulging in fantasy worlds of Spanish-language TV stars among themselves, they had boyfriends. Stringy, muscular Iranian military men fell in love with the fat, formerly lonely Mexican maidens. For them, the fan magazines were crutches tossed aside, and real men loved them. One could find them enthroned in the back of Uncle Charlie's Hamburgers, occupying the seats the former hot-bodied girlfriends of the Mexican gang boys had enjoyed. For several weeks, one component of the passers-by on East Houston Street was the sight of lean, buff, young Iranian men walking their plump ladies down the street, arm around them in loving and protective embrace, and the blaring Iranian music blasting out of Uncle Charlie's. For the people directly involved, some sort of paradise existed, and some of us noted the phenomena that occurred to soldiers of the United States Armed Forces finding love in a foreign land was now flipped to the good fortune of soldiers from Iran finding love with American women. It all lasted a few blissful months. But such is the reality of being a soldier who has laid claim to the heart of a young lady in her home far away. In this case, the training period for the Iranian soldiers was coming to an end. Soon, they were all leaving. Fortunately, none of us who worked on Houston Street had to watch the Mexican-American ladies come to face the reality that their lovers were soon to abandon them. We only caught glimpses of the heartbreak that a call from afar caused. The last poignant moment I personally witnessed was a group of Iranians coming into the store on what was to be the last night for them in the USA. They came to visit the porno racks. They meticulously sorted through the magazines on the bottom shelves, looking at the ever-so-plump models with the black rectangles over their eyes. I felt no threat from them. They were saying farewell to their magazine goddesses. At the end, one of the soldiers came to the checkout counter, looked me in the eye, almost tearfully. Please. He held a small stack of the vintage porno magazines in his shaking hands. We go back tomorrow. All my money, I have no more. Please, may I ask, may I have these magazines? I knew those magazines would never sell, and I had a pretty good notion that none of them appeared on any sort of inventory. Yes, please take them as a gift from the store, I replied. Such gratitude and thankfulness I have rarely in my life ever seen from such a poor sot, having to go back to Iran with no full-bodied lady to hold and love. Thank you, I will remember your friendship. Thank you for your gift. After the Iranians left, I saw nothing of the obese Mexican-American girls. I have no idea how their story played out. Uncle Charlie's ceased to exist. It was an empty hallway. I wonder to this day if I really was kind to the Iranian soldier and wonder what consequences he would have faced if caught with pornography from the United States in his possession. I wondered if the punishment for his transgression of Islam was the removal of his ability to ever enjoy physical love with a woman again. If that brutal punishment was applied, all I could do was hope his memories of San Antonio de Béjar are lasting and fond. For Bondi Tunes International, this is Thomas Booker in San Antonio de Béjar. USA.